What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and diverse musician. He has a very extensive background as a recording engineer and is also an accomplished drummer percussionist who has recorded and toured with some of the biggest names in the industry, such as George Clinton, George Duke, NDIRE, and Ryan Isley of the Isley Brothers. Please welcome multi-platinum recording producer, drummer percussionist, and recording engineer, Dr. B. Serious. What's happening, Doctor?
Hey, man, the world is turning, brother. It's your world. I'm just standing on it.
Oh, man, I can't call it, man. But Dr. B, man, thank you so much for coming on my show. You've done so much work, man, on the hip-hop side, the R&B side, the smooth jazz, the neo-soul community. I mean, it's just truly an honor to have you on the show and chop it up me one-on-one, man. Thank you.
It's also an honor to be on the show, man, seeing the work that you do and hitting the airways and letting the people know what time it is.
Oh, I'm trying to do it out here, man. I'm trying to do it.
You're doing it. You're not trying. You're doing it.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Now, Dr. B, you started, man, you have over 30 years in the music industry. And like I mentioned before, man, it ranges from hip-hop to R&B. Smooth jazz, neo soul. I mean, so many diverse musicians and bands that you work with over your career. I mean, how did this all kind of start for you, man? When did that musical journey start for you?
That started around 5 years old when I got very interested in drums and percussion instruments. And I played around with instruments, banging on telephone books, boxes, whatever I could get my hands on. And right around 13 or 14, I found a place called the Artist Collective in, you know, where I'm from, Hartford, Connecticut. And met a man named Jackie McLean, one of the greatest jazz musicians of all times. And he basically asked me to teach percussion at his school. And I said, you know, I'm here to learn. I mean, how can I teach? He said, well, you know, we're going to teach him now. Why don't you be just assist to go get some students, and maybe you can learn how to be a teacher while you're assisting yourself. I said, man, this is a trip. So I ended up going to, you know, the different projects around Hartford and ended up having about 30 students and just taught them based on what I could pull from the universe out of my own mind, and ended up having one of the hottest, you know, drum crews in Hartford, Connecticut.
Wow.
And later on, I had a lot of bands. I was in a lot of bands, man. I was probably in over 500 bands, man. Sometimes I was in 3 and 4 bands at one time, man. Wow. I'd be doing like 2 gigs in one night, one early, one in the evening, one late. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I played in a lot of bands, became a very accomplished percussionist, and finally started writing and, you know, doing a little bit of arrangements and starting playing around with other instruments. I grew up basically with a friend named Doug Wimbish. I don't know if you know of him. Doug Wimbish is the world's greatest bass player. And he and I grew up together from, you know, little children, and we played together in many, many bands, and we used to cut tracks together and everything until he went on to start what they call East Coast Hip Hop with the Sugar Hill Gang. I moved to California and came out here to be a famous percussionist and found out that people didn't care about percussion out here. So I found out that producers made the money, but there were no young black producers. All the producers were like Quincy Jones, George Duke. And people said, you'll never do it, man. But I got a job in a store that sold studio equipment, and I had to learn how to work the equipment to sell it. So I became a recording engineer while I was learning how to sell the equipment. At the same time, I was in the studio every night, and I learned how to become a producer. And right around 1983, a man came to me and asked me to do a co-production and a mix on a project. This particular project was by a rapper named Captain Rap, and the song was Bad Times. It was produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. This was their first record after they left Prince. And the guy came to me. I didn't really know who the guys were, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they came to me to mix the record and, you know, to finish the production on it. And that became one of the first, you know, happening West Coast rap songs. And then after that, in 1984, I met the LA Dream Team. And these guys, you know, they wanted to do a record. So I ended up doing their first and second album. And they became the first West Coast rap group, or I should say Southern California rap group, to go gold. Now, there's a little controversy whether they went gold first or the Egyptian Lover. But my business partner, who I used to produce with a lot, Tracy Kendrick, he actually worked with Egyptian Lover. So we can collectively say that we're the guys who started Southern California hip-hop rap music. But I came here to really do jazz, R&B, and world music, but I couldn't make any money. I mean, the people weren't really feeling it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was all about hip-hop at that time. Hip-hop was the thing. So I dove deep into the hip-hop world, and it blew up for me, man.
Wow. It's amazing, man. You know, the evolution of hip-hop, especially on the West Coast, man. You know, a lot of people are really focused on the East Coast. You know, that's where it came from. It's where it started. But West Coast has its own particular sound. That you can't find anywhere. You know what I mean? A lot of it's funky. It's got, you know, harder claps, harder kicks, and it's just really a bit more edgier to me and funkier and live instrumentation that's going on in the West Coast versus like the hip hop scene on the East Coast where it's a lot of it's derived from samples and things. So, yeah, man, that's just, man, phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I had a lot to do with that because my thing as a musician, I wanted it to sound real. So instead of, like, you know, getting a sample of a Wurlitzer piano, I said, let's go get the Wurlitzer piano. And let's get the guy that plays the Wurlitzer. Let's get a Fender Jazz Bass. You know, I knew all the instruments. So I said, let's go get them and actually play real grooves. And I was deep into those deep, you know, 80s and 70s grooves. So I just added that into the music. And everybody followed suit on the West Coast saying, this is the West Coast sound.
Right.
So I had a lot to do with building that sound as a musician versus coming from the DJ point of view. And then my partner, who was the DJ, we finally meet in the middle, and you get, you know, the DJ meets musician, and, man, the rest is history.
Right. You know, Dr. B, man, talking about building your sound, man, I feel that influences as a musician is probably the most crucial thing we could have in our lives, man, in our musical journey, man. Who were some of those influences that you wanted to really bring into your sound and make it stand out and really build from there as a foundation, as a producer?
Well, in the past, it was like George Clinton, George Duke, Quincy Jones, you know what I'm saying, Sly and the Family Stone, James Brown, all that kind of stuff. And my sound has changed because now I'm doing a little bit of everything. I mean, I'm doing what we call metaphysical music, which is healing and meditation music, which is a market that I got into because I saw no black people in it. And I said, man, this is our stuff. You know what I'm saying? So right. I put out, you know, that kind of stuff. But I also do R&B. I also do jazz. And once in a while, I'll still step into the hip-hop realm every once in a while and still do a little something. But it's just that hip-hop today is not what it was, and I don't feel it's as free. And it's not as revolutionary as I'd like it to be. So I'd like to stay with stuff that's actually raising the consciousness of people. You know, and I find that, you know, some of the other things that I do now, I like to work with stuff that can change the world in a positive way.
Now, when you get into the recording engineering side of music, because this is what I feel, man. I feel that, you know, being a keyboardist, it was a pretty good transition for me to emerge from a keyboardist onto the recording engineering side of music, because I was really able to shape my tones and my patches and my sound together. You know, sometimes other engineers don't have the ear or the idea what I'm looking for, man. So when was it the breaking point? So, you know, I really want to get into the production side and lean towards more of the recording engineering side of music.
Well, it started in the late 70s, and, you know, I had a four-track, you know, Tascam machine, and I found out how to do sound on sound and all this, and I started, you know, like I said, that time, one of my biggest influences was George Duke, and George Duke actually met me, and we put together a band with Bernie Worrell, Doug Wimbish, myself. We were going to be produced by George, you know, by George Clinton, and it was really interesting because Bernie Worrell said I was going. He said he was going to the store to get some beer, and he never came back. In fact, I didn't see him till about maybe 10 years ago. Now this is like 1976. He went to get some beer, and I didn't see him till 10 years ago. And when I see him, he says, "You know, man, they didn't have the beer you ordered." Can you imagine that?
Wow.
But yeah, I got into it because, I mean, the guys who I admired were always disappearing. I couldn't get with them. So I said, how do they do this? How do they get a sound? So I started playing with the four-track. And like I said, when I got to Los Angeles, you know, I started playing with the equipment, learning about compressors and expanders and equalizers and how to do things that these guys were doing that was actually adding to the sound. Not using something because it sounded good, but it had to add something to the music. But Because I didn't know there was a difference between engineering and producing at the time, I learned them both at the same time. A lot of times you got a producer and you got an engineer. They're two separate people.
Right.
But I was doing it all, so I was self-taught. Then I went and, you know, started reading all the books and went down to the engineering school and took the little tests and stuff. And, you know, I decided that the sound that I wanted was old school. So I ended up buying a Studer 16-track 2-inch machine, which is the fattest, most incredible tape recorder machine ever made.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I have one right now that I'm actually attempting to sell because I have two. 16-track 2-inch. The sound, you can't distort. You can make the fattest bass. The vocals are right in front of you. And I bought a Spectrasonics mixing console. Now, Spectrasonics, people don't know, but they actually manufactured the EQs for Neve. Neve didn't make any EQs at the time. He just designed them.
Mm-hmm.
So, 16-channel straight line Spectrasonics console. And that going directly to 16 channels, man, the sound was just off the chain.
Wow.
And I actually built this whole studio in my bedroom and soundproofed it and did that whole thing. And I made the room into a speaker itself. The room was a speaker. I had these sliding panels, these hanging woods. You know, because I'm a, I really listen to the sound.
Sure.
And I hung these panels of wood all around the room, and I played each one until they were all of the harmonics that you need in music. Each one of the pieces of wood actually vibrated. So me being a percussionist, especially a conga player, when I would play in this room, the sound would just blow people's minds. Vocals would just be like, man, what the heck? How are you getting this sound? It's because the room became a speaker. So I became a creator. You know, I use, you know, instead of just using electronics, I actually use things in the room. Like in certain rooms, we bring in couches and chairs, and we put glasses on a table and have, you know, people sitting in the room while we're recording and record the sound of the room versus a room with no one in it. You see, you can actually, because through magnetic recording, you're not only recording the sound, but you're recording the electrical impulses and the energy around that sound. That there's magnetism in nature. So we were recording stuff where the people, everything placed in the room was part of the electromagnetic sound that we got recorded on that tape. Now, you can't do that digitally. You can only do that with analog.
Right.
You see. So there are ways that I get around that now because I still get some pretty decent sounds analog, but it's a longer route to be able to get a living, breathing record. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, times change and, you know, you got to move with the times. So I became, you know, I started designing synthesizers and things. And I don't know if you're a keyboard player. So you remember the Studio Electronics ATC-1?
Yep, I sure do. And also remember the SC-1 also.
Well, I bought an SC-1 for DJ Quick, who is one of my artists I produced and brought out and discovered and shaped and molded. And I got one for him. And I just didn't think it sounded like a Moog to me. It ain't like my mini move, man. It's cool.
Right.
It ain't like a mini move. So I went out and met the guys, man. And we hung out for a while, the guys that were making these things. And I said, I got an idea. I have this Moog Source synthesizer that has this Mylar pad on the front. Let's make a synthesizer that has the Mylar pad, touch controls, but it has interchangeable oscillators, like an ARP oscillator, an actual ARP oscillator, an actual Moog oscillator. You know what I'm saying? Or
yeah.
a Prophet oscillator. We had these plug-ins in the back where you could plug in all of these different oscillators and get the actual sound. Man, that thing was underrated. They didn't market it well because they were upset that they had to pay me a piece, and they were kind of, you know, things get funny, man, greed and power. So they didn't really market it as well as it could be, but that thing was off the chain, and that was one of my ideas. So I got deep into, you know, because I was a synthesis guy too. So
right. It's
just designing sounds. And if you listen to some of the records we did, you hear sounds you never heard before.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were creating them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This was before sampling, you know.
You know, it was interesting about synthesizers, man. You know, I talked to a lot of younger guys who are keyboarders. And, you know, I started playing boards and tracking when I was about 13 or 14 years old. And, you know, I had the opportunity to play on a lot of the older vintage boards like the Oberheim, the Juno 106, the Jupiter series. And even with the virtual synths that are out there, I have to do a lot of signal processing and really to bring out the low end and some of the mids to kind of get it close to some of my hardware boards that I had back in the day, man. So just to have a designer on the phone with me, you know, explaining the the ins and outs of the old vintage boards, man. It's just, it's totally crazy for me.
You know, was one of my favorite boards was the Korg Poly 6. Man.
Oh, woo. Yes. For synths and leads. Oh, yeah. I definitely agree with you.
Man, the Korg Poly 6 was incredible. In fact, I still got one, and I'm thinking about taking it to the shop and telling them to bring this thing back online.
Sure.
But, yeah, I even had the Moog, what is it, the memory Moog, which was like 6 mini Moogs.
Right.
You know, you had to turn it on like a day before. It would dim the lights in the house. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You had to retune it every hour on the hour, but the sound was crazy, man.
Yes.
But you can't get that stuff, you know, digitally. You can get kind of close, and a lot of people say, well, you know, the sound digitally is cleaner. I said, but see, we're trying to get clean when sound is noise.
Right.
I mean, you listen to a James Brown record. You know how much noise is in that? That grit is the funk.
Right.
You see? So stuff is almost too clean. So what I started doing when I was, you know, in the early days of hip-hop was I would actually record noise. If you listen to the DJ Quick's first album, it's noise in the track that I had to go record and put it in the track. They're like, man, why would you be recording noise? Because nature is noise.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ear doesn't hear noise, it begins to, how should I say, create its own image of what it thinks is hearing.
Right.
But you don't feel it in your bones.
No.
See, you got to feel it in your bones. When you go see a live band, you're feeling this in your bones. So it's a lot of stuff that you have to do before you get to digital to get that. So I go through tubes. You know, I got a TL Audio tube board that I go through, and I use the Avalons and, you know, whatever I can find. In fact, the best tube stuff that I have is from China. I don't even have a name on it. Tube wow. mics and tube pre's that they've made for me. And to try to add those odd and even harmonics before I get into the digital domain. And even when I come out of the digital domain, I usually go back through some more tube equipment just to attempt to fatten it up a little more so that we can feel music.
Oh, definitely, man. I talk a lot of guys on my show about, you know, signal processing your signal before and after your tracking. You know, sometimes it's not the EQ. I mean, EQ helps a little bit, but the color that you're hearing is coming from the mic pre's, you know, the tube pre's. You know, that's where you run your boards and your MPCs to really give it that thickness of sound. And, you know, sometimes you can shape it all day with the EQ. It's just not going to give you that color that I think a lot of guys are hearing to. Used to hearing on commercial records and things. So, man, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, you know, music is a spiritual event when it's analog. It actually moves your electrical body. It's magnetic. This is the spiritual thing. And see, this is one of the reasons they went away from vinyl and went to CDs. See, I was in the meetings and the arguments when they were talking about going to digital. I mean, going to CDs. But what you're doing is you're taking the soul away and you're turning it into numbers.
Right.
And see, odd harmonics, which we call distortion or warmth, can't be recorded by a computer. A computer cannot record what they call chaos.
Right.
That noise, that fatness that you get from, like, you know, a bass player going through a, you know, Ampeg amp.
Right.
This thing is vibrating the world. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what they did was they took a lot of the spirit out of music to get it on a CD. And the big thing they said was, oh, you know, CDs, they never go bad. They don't skip. Well, come here, how many CDs you got now that skip? So that wasn't the truth. The
right.
thing was to get people where they weren't getting the healing factor from music. Because with old vinyl records, see, the vinyl is made out of carbon. So you have carbon, which can record the emotion of the recording session, the feelings of the people in the room. Then you're picking it up with a sapphire or a diamond needle, which is a crystal. See, they talk about this in the New Age world, the crystals, and this is what we use, crystals and carbon.
Right.
Because we're made of carbon. So you can do things with vinyl and tape that you cannot do with digital. But yet, there are things that you can do with digital that you could never do with analog. So we try to use it all as much as possible and realize that, you know, the world is always advancing. So a lot of the stuff I do now, it is digital, but I try to add as much soul to it, much feeling to it before I get in that digital domain.
Right. You know, there's a lot of good converters out there, like Apogee, like the Rosetta series, man. I mean, if you're running some good pre's, on your signal chain and run into some decent converters, you're getting pretty close to achieving that warm sound that, you know, we've been lacking in, you know, from the analog world to the digital world. You know, which brings me up to the evolution of DAW systems, man. I know you were doing some consulting work with eMagic, with Logic, man. And I'm a Logic user. I've been a Logic user for years. And I can't talk enough about the sequencer itself. It's probably the closest thing I can say that you could probably get down to tape for recording. I mean, the stuff I'm doing Logic is just phenomenal. And, you know, give me some of the experiences and some of the jobs that you've been doing using Logic, you know, over the years.
Well, you know, I was a totally digital, I mean, an analog guy. And I got a Cubase system somebody gave me, and it screwed my computer up. It sounded terrible. I hated it. I went in the studio. We used Pro Tools. I'd hate it because I could hear the bits. I could hear the crunching. It's like a crunching sound in my ear. And I said, I don't like it. I don't feel it. I just can't do it. So I would still record analog and then let them take the masters and do the digital thing.
Sure.
And then I met this guy, Greg Tease, from eMagic. And he loved my music. He was into a lot of the Shawnice Wilson stuff I did. And I did this project on this girl named Margie Coleman that he was in love with. You know, he was in love with her sound.
Right.
And he said, man, I'm going to put a digital system on your computer, and I just want you to try it. Man, he put this thing on my system, man, and we went back and forth from analog to digital with the same track, and I couldn't hardly tell.
Right.
Then we did the same thing with Pro Tools, and I could tell. And what he told me was, he said, this is the difference. Pro Tools sends the signal into your converter, and it puts it through what's called a bucket brigade, which means it's filling these buckets of, or these integrated circuits up with information. When the bucket fills up with information, then it dumps it onto the drive. The way Logic works, Logic actually comes in through your converter and drops it right on the drive.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the converter's connected directly to the laser that's burning whatever onto your drive. So you don't have this bucket brigade, which are these gaps in your sound. So the gaps, and they have this thing called the aliasing effect that they use to try to fix that gap. It creates a harshness in the sound. And today people accept that as the current sound because, Pro Tools marketing thing was incredible, man. They just blew everybody's mind.
Right.
But in fact, man, let me tell you, I get so excited about this, I can't hardly talk. Logic blows everybody away. And I got guys who I work with, friends of mine, Living Color, the rock group Living Color.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they gave me some tracks once, and they said, hey, man, you know, we want you just to bring this up on your computer. I don't even have Pro Tools. It's against the law to have Pro Tools in my studio. It's not on any computer.
Right.
You got to go somewhere else to do that. It's a spiritual thing, you know. It's like a church here. So check it out, man. I bring their track up. All I do is bring it up in Logic. And they come in the studio, they're like, oh, man, what'd you do? You mastered the track? I said, I didn't do anything. What are you talking about? Oh, but, man, they're so fat and heavy. What did you do? I said, I took your file. I brought your file up in Logic. These cats lost their minds.
I believe
it. I didn't do anything.
Right.
It's the way, Logic is logical, especially for black music, for soul music. It's just so real.
It is.
It's just so cool. In fact, like you say, you gotta have a good converter. Like I use R&B converters, you know what I'm saying? Because they're half the price of the other ones that are, you know, crazy,
Apogee.
You know,
yeah.
Apogee. But I use R&B and I get an incredible sound. But I tell people, use whatever you gotta use, you know what I'm saying? But I myself, any track you hear me do, it's gonna be done in Logic. Now, if you make me, like when we did the Ron Isley new project, we're going to dump it out of Logic, you know, make everything into an audio file and dump it into Pro Tools for you and keep the secret ours, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I record vocals. Everything I do is in Logic. I love Logic, man. And one of the best things that Greg Tease from eMagic did was change my life by bringing me into the Logic world. And I started when it was like Logic 3, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So now, you know, every time I get a new upgrade, I'm right there on it. I'm at one point, I was like a master at Logic until I started meeting all these other guys. And I realized that nobody's a master at Logic because Logic is a thing that's like an open field. field. It's a designer's world where you can create anything you want. So everybody uses it differently.
Oh, totally.
And my Pro Tools guys always say, man, it's hard because you went to college to learn Pro Tools.
Right.
I didn't go to college. I just picked this thing up and hit record.
Right.
That's all I do is record. It was a little tougher back in the day when it was Logic 7 and all, you know, before that. But after Logic 8 and 9, it's pretty intuitive.
You know, I tell guys, man, even as an engineer or a keyboardist, Logic can be designed the way you work in the studio. I mean, it can be custom designed. I create custom templates for every project that I do. I have a custom project for my show that I do, for my podcast, and my other template I use when I'm tracking and recording. I mean, everything is just split up. I host all of my virtual synths. Everything's hosted up for me. I'm running all of my external gear right into the audio objects, you know, so everything's just lined up for me. And the ESX24, oh man, I've taken this to another level. All of my drum samples that I have, every 10,000 sounds that I have, are lined up in key maps specifically the way I play and trigger my samples. On top of that, I've taken every kick and every snare, every hi-hat, clap, and assigned them their own virtual audio channel. Because now I don't have to worry about just mixing stereo drums. If I want to add specific effects to a hi-hat to make it a little bit more open and airy, I can do that without affecting my kick and snare. You know, so every channel has its own virtual channel for effects and things, and it just allows me to mix and track along the way of the song. And I can't talk enough about Logic, man. I'm right there with you. I agree.
And, you know, between Logic and the Spectrasonics stuff, man, Spectrasonics, I work with them. I'm actually a spokesman for Spectrasonics. If you ever go to their website, you'll see me on there talking about the synths, the trilogy, and, you know, all
the Omnisphere.
Man, I don't know if you got your new Omnisphere upgrade, bro. It is off the chain, man. It's got that thing called the Orb.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. It's really crazy. Because you can get those motions and those movements over time. You can play with the filters just by moving that little ball around. So, you know, you can have one mood in, like, the verse of the song and then change the mood of the synth for, like, the bridge or the chorus. Man, it's off the chain.
You know, actually, I saw Eric Persing displaying at the Damn Show this past year, man. That was amazing. I agree with you.
Well, did you hear what they do with a voice? Did you hear them put a voice through the Omnisphere?
No, I haven't heard that, no.
Oh, they got this thing where they put the voice through, and the voice is me. I'm actually in the synthesizer.
Really?
I'm in the Omnisphere. I don't even know what key it is now. It's one of those programs, but it's me talking. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about Omnisphere, and I'm talking about Trilogy, and they actually took it and made it part of the thing, and there's some sounds in there where they're using my voice through this granular synthesis. It's crazy.
Wow.
You know, but I love what Eric and those guys are doing over there. Their stuff is incredible. I use a little bit of the Arturia stuff sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I got the B collection. I use that quite a bit.
I use the Arturia, you know, there. I just started playing around with Machine by Native Instruments. I've had Machine for since it came out. I just didn't have time to sit down and play with this. Now, my partner, Greg Curtis, he loves Machine. He does everything in Machine. He cuts whole records in Machine now.
Sure.
Besides the vocals, but, you know, so we use Machine a little bit. Like on the Ron Isley project, we did all kinds of stuff. And hopefully, I sent you a track called Love in the Range that we did for Ron Isley. Mm-hmm. You got to listen to that, bro, because they didn't put it out. In fact, the Ron Isley album, we did the whole album, Greg Curtis and I. And they only used two songs because it got into a whole lot of politics and greed, and it was drama, man. And this album would have just blown him totally. He'd have been the greatest artist ever. But
wow.
There's a lot of politics in music today, and they don't really care about stuff like that. It's like the money. They're down to 33 and a third. We're going to give you a check for $50, but you got to give us back 33 and a third.
Yeah, it's all about the numbers, man.
I cut percussion on the track, and they said, well, you know, we're going to take 33 and a third percent of your percussion track. I mean, my money. I was like, man, this is crazy. But if you listen to that track, you will hear a whole, it's like a really electronic type thing. And we even put his voice through the, you know, auto-tune. And I don't like auto-tune, but we were attempting to get to the youth market, you know, and a lot of them identify with the auto-tune sound. So we put Ron Isley through the auto-tune on that track. And, man, that track, in fact, you know, maybe you'll leak it and just put it out yourself, man. It's one of the most, you got to listen to it. It's called Making Love in the Range. And it's talking about the Range Rover.
Sure.
That track is off the chain, you know.
Now, speaking of compositions, Dr. B, man, I wanted to ask you, man, what is your methods for putting songs together for yourself or maybe an artist that you're producing? I mean, because you do come from a diverse background of hip-hop and R&B. So what's the methods of, you know, putting those compositions and producing it together? Is this something like you like to work as a project with a team, or do you like to start the foundation yourself and present it to the artist and the team that you'll be working with?
It all depends. I mean, I'm not the kind of producer that does tracks. I don't do beats. What I do is I meet the person. I need to get to know the artist. I base it around their personality. I'd like the track to sound like they feel or like they look, the way they act. I like to put their personality in the track. Now, I know this is a little bit of an old school thing, but this is still what I do. And I kind of build based on their personality. And I don't have a formula. Everything I do is totally, you know, on the spot. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Sure.
But I always am attempting to get the best out of the artist. So I do things like, even when I'm EQing the tracks, I'll take all the tracks and I'll dip, do a little dip right around 3,000 hertz, about 1 or 2 dB, and then I'll boost the vocal track at about, you know, 3,000 hertz. The vocal just sticks straight out. The vocalist is right there in the living room with you because you cut a hole.
Right.
I also make sure whatever parts we're playing leave a hole for the vocal. A lot of the tracks that I hear today, there's no hole. It's just, you just turn the vocal up so you can hear it.
Right.
But it's much, much more intimate when the musicians are musicians who played in bands like you. You know what I mean? You know kind of what it would feel like on stage. You know, you're not going crazy playing some dizzy part while the vocalist is attempting to make their, you know, their song heard and felt.
Right.
So I always attempt to leave space and hole for the artist, whether it's a horn, a soloing, or a guitar. You know, have respect for the artist. Because today it's about the producers, like the producers are the stars.
Right.
Nobody really cares about the artist half the time. You know, but I'm from the standpoint of let's do what's best for the song. And sometimes the song needs to be cut. I mean, I've got a little recorder. It's a little, what the heck is this thing? It's a little Olympus digital recorder.
Sure.
But the vocal, we might be in a car outside. I may cut vocals with them singing. Write it on this thing because it sounds so good, man. And, you know, and I may take that and wrap the music around it.
Nice.
I may even cut the vocal in the studio. In fact, the studio now is like, you know, a bedroom, and I got a hallway to get one sound, and I've got a bathroom, and I may open that door to get that, you know, that reverb, that echo.
Right.
Sound.
Room ambiance.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And I may do another track dry just so that I can play around with it. I use a lot of the UA stuff. I love the UA plugins. In fact, that's one of the companies that, you know, I did an endorsement deal with. So I may want to use their you know, plate reverbs and things like that.
Right.
And then a lot of the stuff in Logic. But a lot of times I want to capture the environment. I want to capture the soul because there's this energy of soul that's just in the universe and it's waiting to be captured. You have to be like an open vessel. So some of the greatest artists, that's what they do. They're open, and they just receive the soul. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, totally, man. Proper mic technique is essential in any recording, especially if you're doing, you know, acoustic type of recording from vocals to acoustic guitars and, you know, and everything. Nowadays, it's just plugging with the inputs, but having that proper mic technique, man, can make the recordings a hit or miss, definitely.
And sometimes using the worst mic in the world works.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The old mic that's been dropped on the ground, you know.
Look at the old SM57 mics, man. Those aren't expensive microphones, and they're used pretty much in every session I've seen. You know?
Man, this time I'll use that mic for the whole session.
Yeah.
For the whole session, vocals and all. Let's use the SM57.
Right.
You know who I really enjoy right now? With the stuff Charlie Wilson is doing.
Oh,
Charlie,
yeah.
Wilson is doing some serious, I mean, it's old school, but it's new school. I got a lot of respect for what he's doing right now, and it's good to see that people are still recording real stuff, serious stuff that's going to be around a long time.
Right.
When I was working with India Irie on her Testimonies of Love album, she came to me because her song, India Song, she had never recorded. And India Song is the song she got her record deal with. But she could never find a producer to record it because she knew she wanted something really special. So she had my Urban Shaman CD which is, you know, metaphysical, spiritual, mellow type lovemaking music. And she said this was her favorite CD of all time. And we met on the steps of the White House during the Millions More movement. And she was working with Mother Tineta Mohammed, who I was also working with, and she was one of the featured artists, because I was the musical director for this huge world music, like a play, you know. And India told me she wanted me to work. She wanted to work with me. So she let me hear this song, man, India song, and it blew my mind. The bass line of the track is Udu pots. I don't know if you know what Udu pots are.
No.
They're clay. They look like clay vases. Like, just imagine the big water vase. And it's round, and it has a hole in the side and a hole where the water, where you put the water. And when you hit it with your hands, it makes this sound like Udu, Udu, Udu. Wow. And it's real deep. The bass is off the chain. So I have these Udu pots that are tuned to all these different frequencies. So the actual bass in the track is the Udu pots. So when we started that song, it was me playing the Udu pots and India playing the acoustic guitar. When you listen to the song, you'll hear this whole orchestra come in. I work with this group called Dakha, the hip-hop orchestra. Mm-hmm. 78 pieces. Everybody in the orchestra is between like 16 and 30 years old. And these people play serious hip-hop orchestra style.
Wow.
And they do have like DJs, they got percussionists, they got oboes, they got violins, they got harps. Man, if you ever check out this group, Dakha, go check him out on the internet. There's a brother named Double G. He's an incredible composer, man. He's like, he'll be doing stuff like Earth, Wind, and Fire. He'll be doing some of the Philadelphia International stuff. And this cat is a serious, serious composer. Like, he's only 33 years old, but he sounds like he's like 90 years old.
Right.
So, you know, working with India, we brought him in. And also, I brought in George Duke and Kev Lowe. Now, the songs that I did with George Duke and Kev Moe didn't get released. One day they probably will. But when you hear the duet between NDIRE and George Duke, it's going to knock your socks off.
I can imagine, man.
But some of the techniques that we're using are very simple and crude. And it's about getting the feeling. It's about catching it raw, getting the real deal. And not, you know, I mean, I still, you know, I got stuff that I use samples and loops and stuff like that, too. You know what I'm saying? I use a little bit of whatever is needed. So we don't want to overbake the cake.
Sure.
You don't want to overproduce it. You know, you want to do just enough and then be able to leave it alone.
Right. Give the track a little room to breathe, you know?
Exactly, man.
Totally. So what's on the musical agenda for 2011, Dr. B?
Well, I'm just finishing up my second Urban Shaman CD. I sold a lot of those records, even to a lot of the hip-hop crew. They love, you know, DJ Quick was in the car one night, and he was listening to the Urban Shaman, and he said, man, you know, when I get out of the studio, after all this wildness, I like to just mellow out, man. This helps to mellow me out, you know, so it's a mellowing type thing. So I'm working on the second album by Urban Shaman. I'm working on my first album, Dr. B Serious. That's going to be kind of like smooth jazz and funky type things.
Nice.
I'm also working on a Dr. B percussion record, which is mostly world percussion and bass lines. It's almost like drum and bass, but it's almost like bass and percussion. So I'm using a lot of very obscure type weird stuff with Indian voices and stuff from the Middle East and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then I'm also working on a hip-hop metaphysical album. So this is going to be like spiritually uplifting music with, you know, cool harmonies and the sounds of nature over some serious hip-hop grooves. That's going to be off the chain.
I'm
working on that also.
Man, that sounds cool.
Yeah, so I'm doing all kinds of stuff, man. Whatever comes to me, you know. And then I'm an herbalist, so, you know, I'm a doctor of naturopathic medicine. And I got into that because after I blew up in hip-hop, I got sick. They gave me a year to live.
Wow.
I had a multiple system failure. Everything was shutting down in my body. Because the hip-hop, the game had got so crazy, the gangster stuff, man, people were getting shot and hung out of windows. And, you know, I was stressed out, man.
Right.
And I was eating everything, and I had gained a whole lot of weight, sleeping once a month, you know. And basically, I got sick, and they gave me like a year to live. So I went and studied naturopathic medicine and became a doctor of naturopathic medicine. And that's why that's what made me blend music and health, because I do that too. So I have this website, elevationtime.com, where I have all that kind of stuff for people who want to get healthy. Because one thing I noticed, man, look how many people in the industry are dying too soon.
Yes. It's been pretty bad, man. This last 10 years has been unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And most of the folks, I know them. And I'll talk to them when I see them. I say, man, you don't look too well. I can look at your face and read energy and tell what kind of illnesses you may be dealing with in the future. That's part of the science that we learn, you know, in school.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, man, come on. I can't stop eating this. And I can't take no herbs. And my doctor said blah, 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 blah. And I do this out of love. I come to a person out of love and say, man, I love you, man. You know, we are the leaders of the new school. We're dying too soon.
Right.
So I'd like to also, you know, talk to all the producers and musicians and artists out there. Your health is important. And I specialize, man. This is not some herbs you go buy at GNC in one of these places. I got some stuff that you cannot buy, you know.
Right.
And to be able to be here right now, with, you know, after going to so many funerals and seeing so many people sick, I'm blessed at this, you know, every time I take a breath to be here and to be able to teach other people how to stay healthy and do music. So when we were in the studio with Ron Isley, you know, I had cheese cooking, I'm boiling herbs, we're doing the music. It all works together, man, because what good is all the money and all the fame if you're sick?
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
So I blend both worlds, so that's why they call me Dr. B Serious, because I'm not just a musician. I doctor in the studio when I'm mixing, but I'm also a doctor with the herbs and the healing, and that's why I love to do healing and meditation music, because it takes you to another space. But like I said, me now working on this new project where I'm going to be bringing hip-hop and meditation music together. You know, now actually I was kind of inspired when I was looking at what Russell Simmons was doing. And Russell Simmons signed a group of mine called, you remember Boss, the hip-hop rap group, Boss?
Yep, sure do. Mm-hmm.
That was my group. They used to live here in my house, you know. We actually discovered them too. And
wow.
But watching Russell go into this whole, you know, he's like a guru now. And I was like, he's a hip-hop cat, and he's the guru. Let me take hip-hop music and put it together with, you know, metaphysical, spiritual healing music. I'm not talking about no corny type stuff. I'm talking about some real serious stuff. Like what Earth, Wind, and Fire was doing, that was all metaphysical music. The
right.
Chords, the structure, mm-hmm. The stuff they were talking about. You know, being able to put something in the subconscious minds of people that, you know, we can use to heal the world.
Right.
So it's about bringing it all together, man, bringing the love back into it. And I do think that music is, you know, it's changing constantly. And for those of us who can still do the old school production and with the new equipment, hey, man, this is the time to be here and do this.
It is.
This is the time.
I was going to say, man, I've been praying for technology to step up, man, where I could really take advantage. You know, I've always been kind of a computer geek, man, when I was a kid, and on top of doing the music. So now I'm able to work remotely and virtually on any project. I can be right here in Minneapolis, man, and work with somebody out in L.A. and Cali or New York and, you know, be able to fly sessions back and forth. So, yeah, man, the time is now.
It is, man. This is it. We got everything at our fingertips. And like I say, now that we have finally got to the point where digital can sound a lot like analog, and sometimes even better, depending on how you do it,
right.
This is the time, man. This is the time, man.
Well, Dr. B, it's been a true honor and pleasure talking with you, man. We got to get together on something, man.
Well, you know what you can do, man? Send me a track, man. I can throw some stuff on it, throw some percussion on it. If you ever need percussion, I'm your guy.
I got the
real stuff. And, you know, if I have some, I'm always looking for keyboard parts and stuff. Weird. I'm looking for some different stuff, you know.
Right.
So I can MP3 you something. You can send it to me, man. And just email it to me.
Well, man, you have a safe 2011, Dr. B. Man, we'll keep in touch, and, man, we'll get things going.
And thank you, and it's been an honor to be on your show. Keep doing this work, man. It's very important at this time to spread the love, to spread the knowledge, and let people know what's happening in the technical world. Because when the technical, as Kurzweil says, the technical and the spiritual are finally meeting, and now we can do some real work on the planet.
Well said, brother. Thank you so much, man. We'll keep in touch.
And you take care, brother. Thanks a lot.
Have a safe one.
Peace.
Bye. And a big shout out and a thank you to Dr. B Serious for coming on my show and chopping it up with me. It was real cool for me to have him on the show. Dr. B's been around for a while, and he's worked with a lot of artists and done a lot of production works that I'm a fan of, you know, from the hip-hop and the R&B side. And his engineering background alone speaks for itself. I mean, he's recorded and mixed a lot of albums, and he's still in demand today to work on various projects with a lot of various different artists. So big shout out again to Dr. B Serious. For more information on Dr. B Serious, you need to check out his website at www.elevationtime.com. www.elevationtime.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have a Mac or a PC, an iPhone or an iPad, you can open up your iTunes store, click in and type in the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, click on the image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to play a track that Dr. B has written and co-produced for Ron Isley. And the title of the track is called Love in the Range. So I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Hey, baby.